Welcome to this week's edition of Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, coming to you live from Rochester, New York, via the Paranormal Radio Network and also on UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. For more information on the show and on my guests, visit our website at www.keyholepublishing.com. Thanks for joining me this evening. And as always, I want to hear from you. If you're listening live tonight, join us on the message board at Pal Talk to discuss the program and add your questions and comments. Go to ParanormalRadioNetwork.com to join us in the virtual auditorium. You can participate in the conversation there through instant messaging. You can also email me anytime with your questions and comments at kdolan, K-D-O-L-A-N, at rochester.rr.com, or you can call into the show toll-free at 1-877-786-0562. And if you missed any of that, it's all on the webpage at www.keyholepublishing.com. It has been a while. I think it's been more than a month since Rich and Peter and I have all gotten together for one of our supposed to be monthly chats about new current events in the UFO field. Peter, Rich, welcome to the show tonight.
It's good to be back, and it has indeed been more than a month.
When was the last time?
Well, I'm trying to remember. Have we gotten together, I think, once since Roswell?
Maybe it was right after Roswell.
I think so, because, Karen, you and I had our own little show coming in from Denver to the airport this month, but Rich wasn't in that show.
That's true. I'm just looking back
at the...
The
man said I couldn't be in it.
Well, we were in... Actually, it wasn't a show as much as the shuttle out to the airport from the hotel where from the MUFON conference. But
we made a radio show.
You must have misbehaved some point, Rich. I don't know.
I was a very well-known national radio show. I won't say any names. The 21st Century radio show with Dr. Bob Hieronymus on Sunday night for 2 hours, and had occasion to mention a certain book, the part two of which I understand might be back from the printers now.
Yes. Good news. It's been a busy week. The second volume of my book, UFOs and the National Security State, is back from the printer. We have sent off several hundred to readers this week.
The dawn of a new day then. Hooray.
Making their distribution as we speak. I'm thinking a couple of people probably received the book as early as today. I think a lot more will receive it tomorrow. That's what, Saturday? And then, a bunch on Monday. But I think a lot will get it tomorrow.
Well, I have to ask, after all these years and all this hard work, how does it feel to have number two in hand and on the shelf, so to say?
this book is very happy with it. I think it exceeds what I had hoped when I set out to write this history many years ago. I think it's a better book than I'd wanted it to be. I can truly feel that way. I think there's going to be a lot of controversial elements about it. I'm quite sure that of the 100 or 200 minefields that exist in the period that I've covered here, someone will find something not to be happy about. And
well, I'm sorry that it's a better book than you wanted it to be. Had you told me that, I'd help you dumb it down a bit. I'm really good at that.
I'm satisfied with it. I'm not saying it's perfect. I know it isn't perfect, but I think it's as good as I could make it.
Well, we're really excited. Very proud of you. And
I have it sitting on my desk.
Seeing it in print. It looks gorgeous on the website. It looks like a real book, you know?
It does. I'm sorry, what, Karen?
Well, I was just going to say, I haven't had a chance really to read through the whole thing. I got to read sections of it in manuscript form, but I have not had time. We haven't had time to do anything except shipping all week. We finished today. We just caught up. So anybody who has ordered the book and is wondering, where is it, when am I going to get it, because I've been getting a lot of emails, and I totally understand it went out a lot later than we originally expected. Yeah. They're all in the mail. Honestly, the check is in the mail. Every book that was ordered is out.
That's the cover story. The Dolans are after tomorrow with an extradition treaty with the kids and your money.
Yeah.
It was
I'm so looking forward to sitting down and actually reading it now. And I have to say, just seeing
it,
the cover is gorgeous. When it, you know, mentioned Mark, the artist.
The cover artist.
The cover is
yes.
Wow.
A graphic artist out of Ohio named Mark Brabant, whose website is hoveringobject.com.
Great.
And there's a link to it from one of the pages on our site, but I think I'll make it a little more prominent. He did a really great job with this. And
he sure did. It is a first-rate, world-class book design. It is really handsome and eye-catching.
And, Rich, I have to tell you, somebody just put on the message board they got their book today.
Oh,
so
good. I'm so glad.
All right,
I'm
and
so
thank
glad
you,
to hear that.
Joseph, for posting that.
Well,
we were wondering if anyone had it yet.
Hopefully they'll go through it and put their comments out there, you know, for good or for ill, doesn't matter. I think all comments are to be a good thing, because the only way, if I ever go through any changes, amendments to this book, I'll want to know what people think, and you know, and I'll just change it to whatever people want.
He's reading it right now, which is going to make listening to the radio program interesting. But
cool.
Maybe you can
That's
do
good.
That. I don't know.
Boy.
Well, since he's got an advantage over most people, he's got a copy of the book. If he's got little comments he wants to toss into the message board, then, hey, why not? I would encourage that.
Wow.
It's a good feeling. I'll be getting you a copy, Peter. I haven't sent out any of the there's a couple of people who did reviews, such as yourself, and I'm sending those people copies. That you just had to wait, because we really had to wait to get the backlog.
First, by all means.
There were people who ordered this in July,
when
we were hoping that, you know, we'd be able to maybe put a rush on it and maybe get it by like August 5th before we went to the conference in Denver. And, you know, of course, that didn't happen. It was just too big a book. And the printer did an amazing job with it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So when is the first conference you're going to be speaking at with that book in hand, where people can actually get it directly from you?
That will be at the conference organized by Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan, Project Camelot, which will be in Los Angeles, I think the weekend of September 19th and 20th.
Oh, great.
That's the next conference I'm scheduled to speak at.
Excellent.
Now, here in the city of Rochester, we've got, like, local things here going on frequently.
Sure.
In fact, we have what's called a UFO meetup group. And every month, once a month, about 40 or so of us get together. It's a sizable group. It's like a mini conference, really.
That's great.
The group actually has, like, 80 members, doesn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 80
members.
It's quite
a bit bigger,
any given month,
any given week, like 40 of us are there, yeah.
And it's large, you know, and there's a lot of very, very knowledgeable, astute people who are in this group. Karen and I are the two people who are very well known in the UFO group. But frankly, there are people who attend these meetings who are incredibly knowledgeable on a lot of things. I mean, I learn more from them than they do from me, I feel. But we meet once a month, and we do organize, like, there may be, like, local book signings and things like that here for me. But as far as, like, a large conference, I think the one in Los Angeles with Carrie and Bill Ryan for Project Camelot, I think that's the first one I'm scheduled for.
Excellent. Excellent. And do you guys meet up at the local library?
We meet
at a conference room in the Barnes & Noble connected with the Rochester Institute of Technology.
Oh, bravo. Very good.
Yeah, they have a place for us, and they have a conference area where we meet once a month.
And they have a little Starbucks downstairs, so, you know, we're good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's actually
It's a really nice place to meet.
Meetups are a cool thing, and actually there are meetups. The whole idea of it is great. Like, you find a meetup group on the Internet for an interest that you're into, whether it's Monday night football or karaoke or UFOs or whatever it is. So you find people in your region, and then you try to start a meetup group, and other people sign up, and then when you get enough who want to actually meet, it's like a social networking thing, but you actually meet in person. And so what's happened was, there was a woman in Rochester who decided to start up the meetup group, after she had gone to one of my local talks.
Yeah.
And it actually really got off the ground in early 2008, and we've really developed a very good group of people. And so we'll be getting together, I think, in mid-September again is our next.
Great. I've spoken for several, including one in Westchester this spring, and they're wonderful grassroots organization structures, and I'm really glad to hear there's one in Rochester.
I would recommend anyone who's listening who thinks it's a good idea to really look into it. The meetup phenomenon, you just type in meetup, and you can probably, you may find a UFO meetup group in your area. It's very, very possible. So you might just type in, Charleston UFO meetup or San Francisco UFO meetup, whatever, and you may find that there's a group already there, and you can actually meet in person local folks who have the same interest in the UFO phenomenon. It's been really nice for Karen and me.
It's neat, too, because it's not only a UFO thing. There are meetup groups for all kinds of different interests.
Oh, of course.
Whatever you're interested
right.
in, you can find one or start one or whatever.
Yeah.
But the UFO meetup group that we belong to, I think, is really interesting because we learn as much as when we go to a conference. But it's not like just the same people talking all the time. Everyone who comes gets a chance to contribute and to talk about their experiences or ask their questions. And I do, as Rich said, I find that I learn a lot just by sitting back and listening to the people who've been coming for month after month and have been just sitting quietly in the back, and all of a sudden they come out and they're ready to talk, and wow, get some really amazing stuff and some really fascinating accounts of their experiences.
We also have one extra cool thing about our meetup group that we do. We have one guy in our group who's this AV tech whiz genius guy, and he's configured it so that we can take call-ins. So, because a lot of the people in the field know Karen and me, so we've had people calling like George Knapp, George Norrie, Linda Moulton Howe, Nick Pope, Stanton Friedman, have all called in to our group, and they've been put on this kind of big speakerphone.
How
and
true.
So they'll do like a 30-minute or a 60-minute interview. We've had Bob Dean. All these people. Oh,
it's
Rich and Karen,
cool.
Well, we know them.
Yeah, it's great for the people who come to the meetup group because they can't always afford to travel out west. You know, we're on the East Coast.
Absolutely.
And so going out west to where most of the conferences are, it's a big deal. You're going to take time off work. It's expensive.
Well,
you know,
it sure is. And that's a great model for other groups if they're lucky enough to have somebody that has that kind of technical facility. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would be quite sure that, if some local meetup group, across the country were to contact me and say, hey, would you like to just call into our group for an hour?
Sure.
Such a night, I'm sure.
We'd say, yeah, it sounds like a hoot.
Right. And
it
so
is a hoot. It's fun.
There's a lot of, if you just figure out a way to set it up, it's fun. And the people in our group really get a kick out of talking to some of these.
That's great. And you're absolutely right. There was a time when the Northeast here did have its share of regular conferences, but for any number of reasons, the biggest concentration, as we know, are in the West and the Southwest, and we're going to begin to try to change that a little next weekend. I'm going to be part of a brand new event, which will either be a one-shot or go for a few years or perhaps grow into an annual event, and it is the Exeter, New Hampshire UFO Conference and Festival. And it's starting out very modest. The driving forces behind it are our friend and colleague Kathleen Martin and a wonderful New Hampshire MUFON guy who has put so much work into it named Dean Merchant. And we have it set up right now, so it will be an all-day event starting at 8 in the morning and running till about 11 o'clock at night on Saturday the 5th. So it's 1 week from tomorrow. And
New Hampshire is this, Peter? Where?
Exeter, New Hampshire.
Oh, in Exeter, okay, of course.
Yeah, for anybody that's familiar with ufology, the reason for that is fairly significant. Exeter, as much as a place like McMinnville, is associated with an extraordinary series, in their case, of UFO incidents wonderfully dramatized and captured in the late John Fuller's terrific book, Incident at Exeter.
Yes.
It's also not that far from the location where Kathy's aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, had their experience. And again, Kathleen Martin is Betty Hill's niece. Their mother is the late Betty's sister. And
Peter,
she'll be talking about Captured, the terrific book that she's written with Stanton Friedman on their experience. I'll be doing sort of a slight change for me, a talk on why we need to take UFOs seriously, and going into great detail about the origins of the ridicule factor, which, as we know, began the week that the sightings began in the summer of 1947. We also have Peter Jeremiah of New Hampshire MUFON, Ted Loader talking about the Disclosure Project, and one or two other speakers, a whole bunch of special events and fun stuff as well for kids, as well as a dance, costume contests, all that stuff. It's a very modest event, but if you're in the Northeast here or want to act on impulse and come on in to beautiful New Hampshire, two ways you can find out about this event. One is by going to the website, which is events@exeterarea.org. And that's E-X-E-T-E-R, events@exeterarea.org, or calling the Chamber of Commerce at 603-772-2411. And we'll wish them the best, and I'll have a report for you on how that goes the following show that we do.
May I ask you, regarding that incident?
Whoa, Rich, we're getting an echo. I don't know what there we go, that's much better.
Are we better? Peter, regarding the incident at Exeter, now, you know, some people may be aware, others may not, that there was an incredible UFO encounter there in the year 1965.
Yes.
And the primary witness was a young man about to join the military named Thomas Muscarello. And I just want to know, I don't know if he's alive. Does anybody know about him now?
I don't think so. If he is, his name has not come up. We are looking forward to having John Fuller's widow there. John is no longer with us.
Right.
And I am hoping against hope that we will have, just as a guest in the audience, the legendary UFO researcher and writer who has been out of the field for some years now in retirement, and that's Raymond E. Fowler, whose books have impressed many of us over the years. I've not seen him in about 20 years and would love to cross paths with him again, and fingers crossed that he will be attending, but I have not been to that part of that beautiful state in an awfully long time, and I'm so looking forward to visiting. And Kathy, as anybody that's heard her speak knows, she is an extremely compelling presenter. Nobody talks about this case the way that she does. And it's actually a pretty busy month for me. I go a few days later right over to Liverpool, and 2 weeks from now we'll be speaking at the Beyond Knowledge Conference in Liverpool there, along with my colleagues Steve Bassett and Larry Warren and Nick Pope and a number of English ufologists, and be in the land of the Beatles, and then head back down to the Rendlesham Forest for about a week, do some research, meet with some witnesses, re-photograph all the locations. And as you may be aware, there are some interesting breaks in the whole Rendlesham story right now. A number of witnesses, a number of people that were involved, who have never come forward and made their accounts public. We're almost 30 years in now. A year from December will be 30 years. And there is increasing interest for these guys to get together. So I'm going to be looking into a possible venue for that as well, and hopefully a sponsor. But I am very excited and gratified that more and more of these men are willing to at least sit down with each other. I'm hoping that ultimately we may be able to bring it into a more public forum, but this would be a landmark to have these guys get together for the first time since the events of December 1980.
The thing with the Rendlesham case is that it's in a constant state of new information being added to it.
You bet, because of the releases on the MOD website. You're absolutely right, Rich.
And when I just wrote about the case for my new book, and you read that yourself, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried so hard, just to get all of the most up-to-date information in there. And then, sure, wouldn't you know it, as soon as I finished that, yet there's another release of information. On top of that, Charles Halt, the Deputy Base Commander, has now made a new statement, a much more forthright statement about the Rendlesham case than he has made in the past.
Yep.
But so there you go. Although I've included in my book the statement that he made to you and Larry Warren privately, you told me,
yes,
of course, in the mid-1990s, about the lights of this object adversely affecting the ordnance.
And I stand by that.
Bunkers below.
No matter what.
In fact, I was just talking to our
pal Linda Howe about that earlier this week. Linda, bless her heart, has been instrumental in developing a really close working relationship with another key witness, John Burroughs, the only person really who was involved to one degree or another on all three nights. And John has been just terrific in opening up with her, and she's done several memorable presentations on this already and is continuing to work with John on this, including John's courageously allowing her to be there and film with the therapist that he has been doing hypnotic regression with. And I must say, it is heartbreaking, infuriating, and fascinating all at once. So this seminal case is continuing to develop after all this time, and I still feel is the one that could bring down this house of cards if there is one case that we could go to court with or reopen congressional investigations with. This is the one to keep an eye on. So I know we'll be coming back to this in future months.
Peter, there's a question on the message board from a gentleman named Russ in the UK, who stays up until ridiculous hours to listen to the show, and I really appreciate it, Russ.
Thank you,
Russ. He wants to know whether you had heard Charles Halt on Coast to Coast recently, because his attitude seems to be very different.
You know, Russ, I did not hear it, but I stay in fairly regular close touch with Linda, and she told me all about it, that for the very first time he is expressing real anger with other officers who he has not violated, this understanding, this brotherhood of quietness. But one of my major gripes about Mr. Hall is that I always felt, from what I've learned in my fairly privileged position, that, and this is purely subjective, that he should have watched out for his men better. He should have done something to try to protect what some of these guys went through and either was unwilling or unable to. And he is now a lot more demonstrative about his anger about certain areas of behavior of more senior officers on base, which I think is a very healthy reaction and a very honest one. And I am hopeful that with his coming forward on this, with his shopping around his screenplay now that he's worked on with Gary Hazeltine in the UK, and hopefully with more attention being paid to his being more open, that he will allow himself to be part of whatever kind of meeting or reunion that we are able to put together somewhere in the UK next year for these American service personnel, former personnel. But I am aware, and it is a tremendous change in tone. I think back to when Larry and I interviewed him rather dramatically in the food court of the shopping mall directly across the street from the Pentagon under rather anxious conditions, and how different his tone is now, and how John, again, John Burroughs, is now front and center, along with Larry Warren, in doing what he can to bring these men together for the first time, which would be a landmark event, not just in ufology, but as far as I'm concerned, in post-war history. So this is a terribly important story, and we will be keeping on the case here and updating you as regularly as we can, and bless you for staying up until the middle of the night.
Good synopsis, as always.
Yeah. And after your Los Angeles talk, what is next on your dance card?
Next on our dance card?
Yeah.
After you do the conference in L.A., Rich, you'll be speaking at the Crash Retrieval Conference in November.
Oh, good. We'll see each other then. Terrific.
Well, now check it out, though. Even between those two, okay, there is going to be, this is my first ever, now don't laugh, people.
I'm not.
But there is a local psychic fair, and I'm going to be there.
Reading palms?
In Rochester. It's going to be cool. You know
actually,
why?
Rich could do graphology. You know, he's
because
very good at handwriting analysis.
Well, if we're coming clean on things, between now and then, I will be a speaker the weekend of October 17th and 18th in the beautiful state of Massachusetts at the Monster Mash Conference. Yes, I will be there.
That sounds cool. Well, we're having a psychic fair the weekend. I think it's on the 25th, 26th. I'm going to put it on my site. And you know I'm going to catch hell for this. Oh, my God, he's doing psychic fairs. But this is great.
I'm not doing this show anymore. It's hurting my reputation to talk to you right now. Every word I say.
My attitude is, look, if someone wants me to appear somewhere and I get to talk my stuff, discuss my research, get a few people interested in this topic, then I'll do it. And so there's going to be a psychic fair in Rochester, October, I think it's the 24th, 25th, whatever that weekend is.
It's going to be huge, too.
It's going to be large, yeah. So I'll actually be there. And that promises to be a big thing. I'll do, I think, like a half hour or 40-minute presentation, something short.
Great.
And get to chat, meet with the public, and give out some information, I'm sure. And then we do the Crash Retrieval Conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's in early November. And
the weekend of the 6th through the 8th of November in Las Vegas. We're all looking forward to that.
Run by Ryan Wood. And then the following weekend, Karen,
UFO Info Weekend.
Our kids, we will all be at Cocoa Beach, Florida.
That's right.
You're going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
This is another first kind of conference, just like what Bill and Carrie are doing with Camelot. I think that's their first one. This one in Cocoa Beach is the first one run by Seth. Gosh, what's his last name?
Weiler.
I just knew him as Seth.
He's a cool cat. He knows everybody, it sounds like. There's a lot of celebrities. He wants to have a gala conference. Does that sound right to you?
Yes, I think so. Fair enough. His idea, and this is something that we hatched a year ago in July, is there is such a huge audience of people who are into the fantasy aspects of what is reality to us, whether or not they're X-Files fans or Star Trek fans or what have you, even aspects of anime and other pop culture, who have never been to a UFO conference, in part because nobody's ever marketed one to them. So that is what we've been trying to put together here. And for every distinguished personage in ufology, you, me, Nick, a slew of our friends and colleagues, there will be, you know, actors from shows, The X-Files and Star Trek and various films. Exactly. And the marketing is particularly aimed at these folks. Also, the reason that we came up with that particular weekend after a number of false starts and that location is that, weather allowing, we will all have an opportunity to see a space shuttle launch right from our hotel, which I guess if you live in Cocoa Beach is as common as hearing the birds sing, but for folks like us is terribly exciting, and I know we're all looking forward to it, and hoping that the weather will be good to accommodate us. And you can find information on everything that's going to be going on that weekend of November 12th to 15th at UFOinfoweekend.com. Also, for any of you that can join us at the annual Crash Retrieval Conference, my experience has been, as somebody that's only missed one, I think, maybe two, and this will be their seventh one, Ryan is one of the best conference producers we have. It's always brilliantly presented, the talk's selling, it's wonderfully organized, and he has got the ultimate URL, www.ufoconference.com. So visit those sites and check them out. Also, next month, October 10th, 11th, I'll be speaking in Philadelphia for Philadelphia, Pennsylvania MUFON, one of my favorite East Coast MUFON groups, and looking forward to that one as well. So, we've got a lot going, and certainly we'll do our best to stick to our monthly schedule, because I think we'll have more and more to be catching up on each month.
Yes.
I think we will. It sounds like there's a whole lot going on. Actually, there's one thing going on today that a lot of people listening don't know about, and a couple of people who checked our website do know, because I made a point on the website when I described our show tonight. I said right at the end, be sure to call in or join us so you can wish Peter a very happy birthday today. So happy birthday, Peter.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. No, you're not going to sing, are you, Rich?
Maybe.
This, all ladies and gentlemen,
maybe.
Turn on your tape recorders. This is one you don't want to.
We have singing and maybe a little bit of accompaniment, my friend.
Oh my!
I'm just not singing alone. If you're going to be playing, Rich, I'm not.
Well, I'll do a little solo presentation here for you.
I am just so glad I'm sitting down.
Too loud? Is that too loud?
No, that's not too loud at all.
Whoops, there's a little rough there. Hold on, wait.
Go.
Happy birthday, Peter.
Wow.
Happy birthday.
I can now die happy. I have had Rich Dolan serenade me with a harmonica solo on one of my 39th birthdays. I've decided to go back to that one. It worked so well for a number of years for me, and it was worked forever for Jack Benny.
Okay, well, everyone knows you're 39. I was telling you, that's the word on the street. I was just at him a little while ago.
Right, yes, before we went on the air.
I was talking with some dudes out there. Oh, yeah. Peter Robbins' birthday cake, 39, I heard.
It
made the local news.
It's a pretty special birthday for me, and thank you. That is the kind of present that nothing can take away from you. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Peter.
Wow, thank you, brother. I really appreciate that.
The world salutes you.
Wow.
I'm getting a few lols on the message board here.
Yeah. It didn't come too loud on the phone either.
And Joe in New Orleans, I think you can pretty much pull the plug on the show now. We really don't have anything to follow that, so why don't you play something that's recorded for the next hour, and we'll watch TV. Bye.
Yeah, should we save that
kidding.
For the end?
You know, the harmonica is a fun instrument, but it's a little tricky. So, like, every now and then there's a note that you try to hit in certain areas, and it doesn't always play nice. The harmonica won't always behave, I guess is what I'm saying. And so you have to do what they call bending notes.
That's right. It worked for Bob Dylan. It can work for you.
That's right. I had a friend
Peter, you might not know that in addition to speaking and teaching and lecturing about UFOs, Rich has taught classes on playing the harmonica.
He has taught classes. See, you are married to a Renaissance man. Oh, my God. It's one thing to play. It's another thing to teach. Rich,
you know what's funny?
What's
funny is when you get a bunch of adults who've never played harmonica before, and you get them in a high school classroom setting, and there's like 10 of them, right? And you have to start with A Hunting We Will Go. This is all that they can play.
Oh,
and they play it at like double slow speed. And I always say to them, you're going to sound like crap for the first hour.
Yes.
But by the end of the second hour, you're going to sound pretty good. And actually, at the end of the second hour, I get them all playing a little bit of blues. They learn. So I would bring in some like Springsteen or Muddy Waters, so some kind of blues tunes that everyone wants to play along with, and it's actually easier than you think. It's just got to get into the right frame of mind, but you can do it. Anyone can do it. But the thing was, I don't really teach harmonica class anymore. It's just enough. I think I did about 5 or 6 classes. They're very popular because nobody
teaches.
You
did. It was learn harmonica in a night, and you had people.
Wow.
Yeah, I did.
Very cool.
One class, in and out. I often thought it would be fun to have videotaped one of those and just put them out on YouTube.
God,
that would be fun.
Part three should have a CD in the back of the book that you can just have, you know, and even like maybe it could be you and Bruce McAbee. Ufologists make music, and I salute that you have broken the code of proper teaching. I taught painting for almost 50 years at the School of Visual Arts in New York, and for me, the magic moment would be when people would realize, when I start, I will not be good. But the way I used to phrase it was, you can work your way up to mediocrity. And then, from there,
right.
The limit. And we had fun and got a lot of good work done. But isn't that the way it is with us human beings? We're afraid to look awkward or foolish, so we just don't do it. And the dream dies rather than get going.
We have to all learn to be fearless, because everyone makes mistakes, and the only way we learn is when we make mistakes.
Amen.
Oh, I'm getting a message here. Can I play the tunes from Close Encounters?
Oh, now that's the thing. A CD of themed tunes.
Yeah, I've been watching.
Right, isn't it? Sort of. Close enough.
Well, that's a cooler version. That's like the feeling if you have a bend note. Then, yeah.
One actual
comments are like... Some of these comments on the message board are great. They're saying paranormal harmonica tunes by Rich Dolan. And that should be great.
Make a little
You're going to have to come
I think
we're now,
coming into a theme here, and if you know, we all wish you the best on the book, but if sales are not what you're hoping for, I think you've got another avenue to move out into here.
paranormal campfire tunes. I'm sorry, somebody says there might be something over the house now. Great.
My playing has declined. I actually used to be a little bit better, but we've had a dog in our house for a few years named Jenny, and she's a beautiful black lab. But the problem is, every time I would play in the house, she goes insane.
Oh no!
And she
sings.
She'll sing along, and it's not that she doesn't like it; she loves it. But when I play, she will howl.
She's singing.
I can't play.
She comes over and sits right next to Rich, and she'll try to climb in his lap, and then she'll start howling.
And she's a big dog.
Wow.
I can't really play as much. And I used to drive around in the city of Rochester, and I'd always have a harmonica with me. And honestly, I mean, people must think I was crazy, because I'd be stopped at a light and start playing a tune on my harmonica. And I know that, you know, some person next to me is, like, looking over at this guy play some tune on the harmonica, but I just love playing it.
You didn't even know that you were that crazy UFO guy.
Yeah.
No, I'm just a crazy harmonica guy.
I know
Here's a suggestion. Jenny and Rich Dolan do Mars Attacks, the musical.
There you go.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I know that a lot of our listeners tune in because we're fairly high-class personalities, and they admire our intellect, so let me share with you that the one major birthday gift I received today on my birthday is from my dear friend and soul sister in London, Michelle, who has sent me a CD. You're going to be might tell you about this, but I guess I'll have to agree in advance to make you a copy. The title of it, and it has a lurid 50s cover with a scantily dressed blonde reacting with a certain amount of angst as a monster comes closer to her on the surface of the moon. The title of the CD is Space Guitar and Death Ray Boogie, Vintage Science Fiction Songs, 1930 to 1954. Jealous?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah, it's got Flying Saucer Boogie, Rocket Boogie,
wow.
the Trail of Halley's Comet, an Ella Fitzgerald song called Two Little Men in a Flying Saucer, Honeymoon on a Rocket Ship by Hank Snow. I've got Jet Propelled Papa. Yeah, that's on this too. Space Guitar, Rocket 88, Flip, Rockin' with the Rockets, Nakasaki,
wow.
Which is very, I'm guessing that came out in the 40s, very chilling. Rocket,
yeah.
The Nine, Radar Blues, Death Ray Boogie, The Golden Rocket, Rocket 88, Baby Doll, and Skyliner. Now, that's a great tune, Charlie Barnett and his orchestra. But, yes, this is going to be a...
Golden Rocket, Peter, might not be about flying saucers. I'm sorry.
I'm guessing not.
You have a double meaning there.
I think there is a double entendre there, which we can really not discuss in any great detail on the show. But, ladies and gentlemen, that is Space Guitar and Death Ray Boogie. I'm hoping it's available in this country. I've received it as an import from the UK, and even with our serious predisposition toward the topic, isn't it amazing how many goofy things people find for us relative to this theme as gifts? But, yeah, this is probably quite good. And I'm going to guess that some of these are applicable to harmonica arrangements. I'm not going to say any more about that, but I can hear you playing Rocket with the Rockets now. Flying Salsa Boogie, yeah, yeah. I have to look into copyright on that stuff, and I'm cautiously optimistic that a CD might be a major move in your career. And again, with Bruce McAbee in the background, who I heard play again earlier this month in Denver, and Bruce has not lost his touch on tickling the ivories. He is a remarkable pianist.
Well, what ufology really needs is a really good Vegas-style lounge act, and that's me, Peter. That's my true talent.
Rich!
All right, we're not talking harmonica here.
We're going to be in Vegas in two short months, Rich. I'm going to not say any more about it, but start working on the act.
Look, I'm
off the lounge,
okay?
And this could be a major move in your career. Major.
I mean, just ask any of our kids. They know.
I would beg you not to do it, but I just think that would be so cool. You need to.
I'm sure Mike and Elaine point with great pride as opposed to fleeing the room when you are engaged in this.
Well, no, they leave the room, but they tell me it's because it's just so great that they have to go out and rush out to their friends. They never come back, but I just assume they haven't had the chance yet.
Oh, but Rich.
I think they like it.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they do.
Maybe you should have been homeschooled, too, but be that as it may, the woods outside of Enfield, New York. But, otherwise it sounds like a very good move.
We have thought of a karaoke kind of thing. Karen and I have discussed doing, like, karaoke. I have done karaoke.
Well, you have, and you were quite good.
Enjoy karaoke.
In a good, straight-focused state or somewhat inebriatorially inclined.
Well, it helps to have a couple of beers. I mean, that's true. But no, I'll do it straight up.
Four.
Nothing wrong with that.
Four. Karen says four.
Not three.
That's the magic
not
number.
Four.
Wow. Well, again, in 2 months, we're going to be in Vegas. And our talks, of course, I'm looking forward to hearing yours, and I'm looking forward to giving mine. But this, again, like having this serenade on the air tonight, and again, this show has taken on a less than focused ufological tone tonight. I think we needed this.
Well, we're in a professional mode tonight.
Well, yeah, it's just the other aspect of our professionality. I have gold and platinum records for art direction on heavy metal albums going back to an earlier incarnation in this life. But, with all the musical talent we have in ufology, that would be an amazing lounge act. And I'm looking forward to the Friday night, the Saturday night, and especially the Sunday night at the hotel. And I would say folks should now consider all the more going to UFOconference.com and registering for the upcoming 7th Annual Crash Retrieval Conference. It promises to be one none of us will forget. And bring your tape recorders.
Yeah, this is the thing about any of the conferences that anyone who's a public or semi-public figure has to worry about, because everything gets on YouTube now.
I know.
Everything gets on YouTube. You have to really watch what you say.
And well, I don't know if you heard through the grapevine, but early this month, again, poor Karen, were you in the banquet on Friday night, or were you ever allowed in that?
And you know what? I think I know where you're headed. We actually need to cut to break.
Oh, let's
so
do it.
Let's tell this when we come back from break, because I was having a little computer problem here. I got locked off, but I wasn't able to get my memory. But it is time to end our first hour. I can't. It's just gone so quickly tonight. This has been so much fun. And I'm seeing a ton of people are just joining us in the message board in the chat room here. So we're going to have even more fun on the second hour.
Where's the UFO stuff?
Maybe
we should get on track a little bit when we get in.
Sounds good.
Well, you know, we can do. Well, yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit about the conference, the International MUFON Symposium in Denver, which Rich was not able to attend because you were home with the book and the website and everything. But Peter and I were able to go. And I know you've got a great story about that one that I really do want to talk about as soon as we get back. But we do need to take a break, and I just want to remind everyone you're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. We'll be gone for about 8 or 10 minutes when we come back. I'll be back here with Peter Robbins and Richard Dolan. Believe it or not, we're ufologists, and we will be talking about UFOs at some point this evening, so don't go too far. We'll be right back. And you're listening to PRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and this evening my guests are Peter Robbins, author of Left at East Gate, about the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, and also Rich Dolan, author of UFOs in the National Security State, Volumes 1 and 2. Volume 2 is out. It is back from the printer. It has been shipped. I've gotten some notices that a couple people actually have received the book, so I guess they're going to hold up reading this weekend. Gentlemen, just before we cut to break, we were about to talk about something that happened at the International MUFON Symposium in Denver just a few weeks ago, which Peter and I were able to attend, but Rich was very busy with the book, and he had to stay home that weekend. Peter, you were going to tell us about something really fun that you took part in.
I've changed my mind. I've grown suddenly very shy about the... No, I haven't changed my mind. I worked on and off for 25 years in New York theater and management, studied acting for many years, and I don't know if that's the reason that MUFON's international director, James Carrion, contacted me sometime before the symposium to find out if I was willing to be an extremely good sport and be involved in a skit that he had written for presentation after the banquet on the first night. Now, bear in mind, this is just past now the 40th annual International MUFON UFO Symposium, so it was quite a big deal. And when I read through the skit, my first reaction was, not on a bet, no way, this is not going to happen. And then upon reflection, I thought, it's all in good fun. If I don't do it, somebody else will. And if somebody's going to make a fool of themselves here, it might as well be me. Plus, I get to work opposite my friend and colleague,
John.
Yes,
don't mind me. Yes, exactly.
You know what I'm talking about. He's got the hair.
Very funny.
He wears those shoes.
He used to drive that blue car. Sorry, that was a Simpsons thing.
Yes. John Greenwald, Jr., the man behind the Black Vault, possibly the most legendary website of its kind and archive of formerly classified documents and records. And the skit was set 40 years earlier at a little backyard barbecue with two men who were discussing the fact that they really were not having a good time working as lackeys for the then major UFO organization in this country, NICAP, and maybe it was time that they started their own. And they ended up being the co-founders of MUFON. That's Walt Andrus and John Schussler, who were sitting on the stage directly behind us as we played them, as they might have appeared in a bad dream 40 years earlier. And I was Walt Andrus, and John was John. And I was putting forward that I was having more and more of a problem with this, and did John want to start an organization with me? And we went through various acronyms, some of them with extremely goofy humor involved. James did a great job on our skit. And at one point, we decided to fool NICAP. Oh, no, actually, we were going to be fooling the folks at the Condon Committee, especially Dr. Condon himself, and John flipped a burger, and I photographed it midair, and we were joking about scratching up the negative and sending it off to them as an unidentified flying burger. And at a certain point, I leave the stage, not to get too much into bathroom humor, but that's just what it was. I was going to use the facilities, my character in any case, and John said that there was no paper left in the John, so I left using the Condon Committee report. It was a little bit of ufological scat humor there.
There you go. That's good.
And then at the very end, I leave.
Let's have a round of applause.
Yes, and John is approached by a man in black and a female alien, and it ends pretty much with him being abducted, and that was the skit. And it was filmed, I'm horrified to say, and I'm sure it can be chased down on the Internet even now as we speak. Oh, we also got to wear polyester.
And I got to see this.
Have, you know, I had my shirt buttoned up to my neck and a camera around my neck, and it called for wearing, like, you know, 60s-style glasses and then switching them for dark glasses, but there was a bit of a screw-up in the costume department, so we got to wear dark glasses and then take them off and put on darker glasses, which had its own humorous impact on the audience. It was a lot of fun, really.
All right, and this has got to be available. We've got to get this on YouTube.
Yes, I'm afraid it's going to loom large in my legend, and when all is said and done, this is what people will remember and not my contributions to the more serious areas of the field. But it was great fun, and John and Walt seemed to enjoy it, and their wives didn't poke me with any sharp sticks or anything, so I'm cautiously optimistic that it was well received by the parties it intended to honor.
Everyone was very gracious.
That's good.
It was fun. It was really fun.
Yeah, polyester. Forgot all about it. Pretty amazing material.
Space age plastic.
Yes, yes. And on a serious note, when I was invited to present at this conference, I sent James a list of topics to choose from, and none of them were stock topics. They were all essentially things I've been thinking about developing for lectures and research pieces, and I said I'll tackle this, you know, from the start and develop it for the conference. And much to my surprise, the one that he chose was the one I considered far and away the most controversial. And I don't know about you, Rich and Karen, but every once in a while, in the course of developing a lecture that, you know, you're commissioned to do, it does not go as planned, where you've got all your research materials, you put it together, you put it in order, you got your PowerPoint, you're ready to go. this one, the more I developed it, the more troubling and the more complex the subject became to me. It's a very important and delicate series of topics that I was touching on, and even as I came into my press deadlines, because unlike most conferences, the MUFON Symposium prepares a very well-printed and prestigious proceedings, and this year's was no exception, and it was huge, where they go to press quite a long time before the conference, so the conference is in early August, and they wanted that paper in early May, and I got a slight deadline, got it in, and then totally continued to rewrite it. And not that it's a completely different paper than the one I delivered to them, but it is significantly so. So what I'm alluding to may be more obvious when I tell you that the title is Politics, Religion, and Human Nature, Practical Problems and Roadblocks on the Path Toward Official UFO Acknowledgement. And it runs almost 30 pages. I've sent you off drafts that I know you find some...
It was very good.
Well, you saw an earlier one, and I appreciate
that.
If you like this version, you are welcome to post it on the website, and any listeners, this is one of those rare papers for me that I'd be happy to see go completely viral. You do not need my permission. I am not putting a copyright provision on the paper. I'm very proud of it, and I hope that my friends and colleagues in the exopolitical movement and in the disclosure movement will realize that I'm trying to point out some of the things that they don't seem to be paying attention to, which are very problematic and troubling to me, and hopefully engage them in dialogue, even be invited to speak at a more specialized conference on either of those topics, which I have not been included in past. But I know the audience reaction there was just great, and, you know, that's so gratifying, especially after you put an awful lot of work into something. The paper... again, especially the religious aspects of the potential impact of releasing, declassifying, and making public information on this subject, there are implications and touchy aspects that may be more of a problem than most of us that want to see this material aired in public have been really giving much thought to.
I felt that way for a long time, that disclosure will cause an array of problems, including the good old-fashioned religious problems, but I think really across the board of our society, it's going to be a revolutionary thing. And, even though I believe it's going to just tear up our society in so many ways, one might ask, well, why do I believe in disclosure? Because I still do. And I can only reply that, you know, a couple of things. One, no matter what our efforts are at pushing disclosure, my hunch is that it's going to happen independently of whatever any group or individual person does, that the process is bigger than people.
Yes, I thought you made that point wonderfully well last month in Roswell.
And then the other thing is that, it's inevitable. It's just something.
Yeah.
You have a choice. You can either have a society based on deception, and this is such a big, big part of deception that I feel it causes an array of other kinds of deceptions that have to be necessary to accompany it. So you have a society built on lies, or do you want a society built on truth?
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple, and I think when you put it to people that way, they're going to choose truth. Now, to go from a situation where there have been so many falsehoods spoon-fed to us for generations and lifetimes that there's going to be a lot of upset, unhappy people, but what else can we do? If it were 1960, and I'm sure this is what happened in 1960, if you were one of the secret keepers, you could think, to tell the public about this, but look, if we do that, there goes the oil industry, there goes our electronics industry, and why would we do that? We have all this oil, we're not running out, we have no problem. And so they would think that, and there wouldn't be any kind of urgency, but this isn't 1960, we're in now 50 years after that, and it's a different world. And what the system we have that we're working off of is not going to be able to survive indefinitely. So we need a new paradigm.
Yeah, you brought up, yeah, the way you said it has been very well phrased. In fact, going back to 60, or actually 61, the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, I did quite a number of interviews with colleagues, with people of faith, with Christian fundamentalists, and worked the information that I gleaned from them into the paper. One of the most memorable was discussing this with Kathleen Marden. Now, again, for any of you that know who Kathleen is, she is unforgettable, but she's not as well known as her co-author, Stan Friedman, on Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. Kathleen, on a certain level, is an American archetype. She's a lovely woman. She's a grandmother. She has a background in education and social work. She's a New Englander. She says what she thinks, and she's bright, articulate, and no-nonsense. She is also Betty Hill's niece, and it is so unforgettable to hear her talk about the morning that she was in the kitchen with her mother. I think she was 13 at the time when her mother's sister, her Aunt Betty, calls to tell her about something extraordinary that had happened the night before. So begins that aspect of her life. Now, Kathleen is a proponent of limited declassification and release, and has had decades to consider this question from her particularly unique point of view. Not only familially, she has also served on the MUFON board of directors as their director of field investigative training, and has a background again in both social work and education. Now, that has left her concerned about social unrest, and well, let me just quote her briefly here. I think this sums it up on a certain level. We currently have a situation where an alien civilization can visit us at will, abduct and experiment upon us, and harvest our natural resources. We are completely helpless to protect ourselves politically and militarily. My primary questions are as follows. How would we proceed after disclosure? Would we normalize relations with them? Or do they feel so technologically, intellectually, and emotionally superior to us that they think of us as primitives, unworthy of standing on equal ground? Would they then land at will in full public view? Would they openly abduct us? Would full disclosure lead to a chaotic society and the degradation of cultural values? Would it lead to a rise in alcoholism and drug abuse? Full disclosure does not necessarily imply the sharing of technology, and it could have a disastrous impact upon our civilization. Now, this is not some doom and gloom kind of prophecy. It's simply thinking realistically, and I'm just more and more concerned about the Welcome the Space Brothers and training diplomats to deal with aliens. I think it's well-meaning, it's idealistic, it's understandable, and naive.
I have a serious problem with almost all of that aspect of what we can call exopolitics.
Yeah.
I have, as the years go by, my problems with that become bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know, all of these people are individuals known to me personally, of course, and a lot of listeners know all the names. And it's distressing to me because I have no confidence that this type of program will do anything that's useful. So, you know, what are these? And also, it's based on a premise that they actually are dealing with extraterrestrial intelligences that are going to be able for us to be able to relate to.
Indeed.
That they're going to be willing and they want to help us. And I see this as it's probably true in a couple of cases, and I'm simply basing this opinion on a number of cases that have been investigated and that I've looked into as well. But it's also, I think, very naive to think that all of the beings out there are good. This is what Stephen Greer says. And I'll call him out by name. I've been discussing him in public lately anyway, so why not? But I just think that it's irresponsible
completely
for Dr. Greer and a number of other researchers to go out there and say things flat out, like the aliens, the extraterrestrials are not harmful. If they were harmful, we would know by now. They would have tried to destroy us. This
no.
is specious reasoning.
I love that.
It is,
okay.
And again, it presumes that we know the unknowable, and for me, that is accompanied by an intellectual arrogance that if you're smart enough to self-perceive what you're doing, it's unforgivable. Nobody knows. Nobody can know. You can think you know. You can even be convinced that what you think you know is correct, but it's only one step away from another set of beliefs that are not unlike fundamentalist religious beliefs that are based on faith, that are based on why should you even trust your sources? Deception is the main thread that winds its way through our contact with these beings.
At one conference, I actually went out to state that hope and fear are both of our enemies. Hope,
yes,
you know, we all say
that.
Fear is an enemy, but we think hope is good. Hope is not good. Because when you hope that something is good, that means you're investing yourself emotionally in a particular outcome.
Well, it's another
and
kind of
faith. You can't. We have to have a supreme detachment to this. We really must, because we've got to keep our heads.
Yep.
We're in a situation with other intelligences. One thing is absolutely known, and that's that our militaries and other militaries chase these things. And this is something where a lot of
big
the
time.
People in exopolitics, it's very obvious to me that they don't know any UFO history that's worth knowing.
Yeah.
I don't think they've studied anything.
Well,
they talk
thing
about
I,
these other intelligences, and yet I get no evidence that some of these people really know a thing. Some of them do.
I don't say this in the paper, but I think the understanding is there. If I hear another human being refer to, with a straight face, the Eisenhower Treaty of 1954, I'm going to get draconian on their ass.
I completely agree with you there.
Oh.
That's not to say, look, that something might not have happened.
Yes, absolutely. But
the rumors came out almost immediately.
And when you go on record with something like that, you are pinning a kick-me sign to your back. I cannot underscore
enough.
Well,
the people, we got Alfred Weber and Michael Salah both say this.
Yeah. Okay,
both of those people.
It's very damaging.
And Alfred in particular, I don't mind calling him out because he's brought me out into the public on certain things. All right, he's caused real problems with some of these egregious statements he has made.
Yeah,
because almost none of them are ever supportable. B, the mainstream media goes after Alfred and they make him into a joke.
He's the best target of opportunity on this. And again, you can say there is mythology, rumor, legend, a certain amount of testimony that points to the possibility that a series of events could have transpired in the Southwest in 1954, blah, blah, blah. That is very different than referring
Absolutely.
To the Eisenhower Treaty with the aliens.
Absolutely.
And as our dear friend and colleague, but Atkins has observed more than once, they don't need to make treaties with us. This is a pro forma fantasy. And yes, I get quite fired up in having to deal with this over and over with colleagues who I don't think they realize the perceptual damage that they do to individuals who potentially might take this subject more seriously if, for example, an early book that they read might be, UFOs in the National Security State, Part 1 or 2. It will ground them in 20th century American history. And you're very good about not generalizing. It's one of the things I love about your writing, that you are extremely specific, as a good historian has to be. And your deductions are based on material worthy of making logical and realistic deductions from. But again, I look at a very nice color brochure from the Exopolitical Institute in Hawaii. You can sign up, you can take courses, all well and good, but right there below, you know, Paula Harris's fascinating sounding course on some aspect of UFO history is a course that is dolphin oriented. Lovely. I love dolphins. They're charming creatures. But that is not productive. The way that this is presented, form is as important as content to begin with for folks on this subject. They're frightened. They're looking to take us down. I remember early on, way back in the days when you were still a knee breeches, lad, you'd go to UFO conferences and the speakers' uniforms, and they were all guys, were, you know, kind of nerdy, sort of Buddy Holly or Malcolm X glasses, a tweed sports coat with lapels so wide they touched in the back, fashion police disaster clash on shirt and pants, and always a big honking UFO lapel pin, and sometimes a pocket protector. When I do major talks,
pocket protector.
I try to look like an investment banker. You know, I'm not going to be taken down on appearance. The best they can do is call me short. I have to concede to that. It is true. I think I'm tall, but rumor has it. Thank you. Although I'm fine if I am, but you got to cut through some of this stuff with humor, because otherwise you would be institutionalizable. One of the surprises for me in doing the work, and I was referring back to the Brookings Institution report of 1960, which was fairly dark in its predictions of contact and the impact it might have on the world of organized religion. What I'm seeing now, and I think it was wonderfully articulated a year ago, September, in the MUFON Journal in a terrific study on UFOs and religion. In fact, it was called "Is Extraterrestrial Intelligent Life a Threat to Religion?" by the Reverend Ted Peters and his associate Julie Fröhlig, and it's worth reading. The big surprise for me was after conducting, according to very proper code of conduct in doing a major investigation like this, he looked at the religious traditions of Catholics, a number of groups of Protestants, Orthodox Christians, Mormons, Jews, and Buddhists. So it wasn't every religion in the world, but it was a good cross-section. And they, people of faith in these religions, they are not going to lose faith in their belief in God or monotheism if it is announced that, you know, there are other intelligences and they may well be extraterrestrial or interdimensional, whatever. The interesting thing for me was that it is mostly non-religious people who are concerned about the impact that the airing of such information in public would have on our religious brothers and sisters. For me, the real problem lies in the beliefs of religious fundamentalists, and every religion has fundamentalists. These are folks who are absolutely literal in their interpretations of their holy books, and there is no room for interpretation.
Well, what's going to happen, mark my words here, disclosure or any kind of massive change, those people will never change, right? People get to a certain age, it's not just fundamentalists, it's most of us. People don't change their worldviews very easily. Now, something this big can shock someone into changing, but what will happen, I think, is that generations will indicate the change. Their children are going to grow up in a world very different, and what will happen is that the fundamentalist beliefs of all types will be gone. I really believe that a disclosure on the UFO issue or an openness on this is going to be a solvent on fundamentalist belief systems. This is maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that traditional fundamentalist faiths will survive in the long run. 50 years, they're going to be much weaker because we're going to be in a completely different world. I think they won't survive.
That intrigues me. I don't even know whether I hope that's the case. I simply hope that those who are extremely rigid in their thinking are able to move through it and adjust to the new world that we will have at hand. And Christian fundamentalist thinking aside, and again, anybody can email me and I'll be happy to send you a copy of that paper. I'm asking people to post it on their websites. But let's take a look at what do you think the reaction of the Taliban will be? Possibly the most, certainly one of the most intolerant fundamentalist religious sects in the history of theology. I am just beginning to study and try to get a sense of what Quranic views this may touch upon, but I can tell you as much as anybody that it will not just be a problem for them. It will be seen, and when I say it, I mean an announcement that is supported by world leaders, that we are not alone in the universe, and that these other intelligences may have an extraterrestrial base, again, may not. They will be seen, much the way they are, by Christian fundamentalists as manifestations of Satan, in this case made to lead us away from the teachings of Muhammad. And especially if such an announcement should come from the great Satan itself, their nickname for the United States of America, the implications may be shattering.
Maybe you're right.
Think of their reactions to American boots on the ground in Saudi, or even, you know, the number of deaths in terms of riots that were attributed to the Danes, possibly the most decent, open-minded, kind, healthy people in the world, or certainly among them, of having the tenacity to, you know, one of their newspapers publishing a number of political cartoons that depicted Muhammad in ways that were less than religious.
A couple of years ago.
Something like 200 people died as a result of that. That's for a cartoon. How do we think they, and they being fundamentalist Islam, will react to this? It's very, very unpredictable in the worst sense of the word. So I'm just hoping that opening the room for some dialogue here, and I am actually hoping, I have informally committed myself to discussing this in public forum in November when we're in Florida together as part of the program at the UFO Info Weekend with Joe Jordan. And I'll do it. He will have Jesus on his side, but I will have notes. And I'm hoping that this comes to pass because we cannot no longer talk about this. I think it's informed by a certain amount of characterological niceness that most of us are brought up with and stuck with about never wanting to say anything that might be interpreted as even remotely derogatory about somebody else's religious beliefs. But as we all remember last year, our reactions to the fundamentalist presentation that was done in Roswell, certain things have to be addressed because they...
I agree. I think and nothing is off the table. Everything can be discussed, and we can't be in a position where we're afraid of hurting somebody's feelings or not appearing PC.
Well, that's thank you. I think that's what it comes down to in part. Thank you for saying it.
Deal with the issues, not the person.
Yep.
Let's not get into personalities. And in this field, in all fields, people get into personalities way too much.
You know, my feeling is fight, but fight fair and fight respectfully. And I am often in mind of the words of the late Federal Judge John Sirica, who oversaw the Watergate hearings, one of my heroes, and that wonderful quote of his, "Let the chips fall where they may." Or as they say in the mafia, it's nothing personal, it's just business.
Yeah, that's right. Well, exactly. Exactly. So did we cover religion? Did we do it?
As much as I think, you know, we should for now, but this is a topic that is not going away, and we will be coming back to it, no question about it, just like Rendlesham and just like harmonica playing.
Indeed.
their attorney.
Gentlemen, I have a question on the message board.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Dick Criswell and a team he claims he worked for called AlphaCom during the Clinton years, gathering information for disclosure?
The answer to that for me is no.
No, I don't know about this either. What is the spell
Dick
his name?
Criswell?
Dick Criswell?
Have either of you heard of Dick Criswell? C-R-I-S-W-E-L-L, and a team he says he worked for called AlphaCom, which was supposed to be gathering information for disclosure during the Clinton years.
Well, really, this
is
something I have
either.
To look into.
Nope.
My next book will be dealing with the Clinton years. I have a lot of information already
yes,
on that.
That's
but
right.
I don't have this, and so I certainly want to find out
go get
what
that.
Exactly that is. I'm writing this down.
I wish I could say more, but my only responsible answer on both counts of that question is no.
Well, let me say this. If I find a lot of information, or this individual wants to send me personally an email link, please do it. My email is keyhole, K-E-Y-H-O-L-E, at rochester.rr.com. Send me something. I'm going to look this up myself, and if I find anything, although I don't know who you are, I will thank you because I'm looking for information on that. And if you've got something that's legitimate, I certainly want to know about it.
And on actually wanting to know whether something is legitimate, there's another comment that's come up on the board. People are talking about someone named Bill Nell.
K-N-E-L.
Tim may know about.
What
did I not only
know
about, I knew Bill Nell back in the day. Bill Nell is a charlatan, a thief, a liar, and a con man. And when I knew him, now let me say what's really on my mind. And I will stand by those words till I die. In fact, he is marketing a video that was done of a talk that I did years ago as his own product.
Yeah, he's gotten me out there too. He's taken many videos from a lot of people.
I was just saying. There were notices on the message board to watch out for this guy because he's selling work that belonged to other people his own. And I've got other people on the message board saying, yeah, he took my work. I looked up his website, and there's UFOs in the National Security State DVD right there.
That he wrote, I think.
Yeah, apparently.
I knew Bill.
He's selling it for $5.99. I don't know when which presentation this is. It says UFOs in the National Security State Exposed, but this we don't know anything about this at all. I mean, this is not something that we have an arrangement with him for. So apparently he got hold of a copy, and now he's selling it himself.
Plus he's basically on the run now. I think there's even FBI interest in his scams. I knew him like 25 years ago when he was first starting out in this, kind of like a roly-poly Rush Limbaugh wannabe, as I remember him as sort of a round fellow who was very affable and a hanger-oner. But no, he's a crook, he's a thief, he's a con man. Most of us are aware, and I've even tried to contact him via his contact information on his website with a cease and desist order even as recently as about 6 months ago. But, you know, he doesn't respond to anything. And this is a man that needs to spend a little time in the Hooskow and reflect on his nefarious ways.
Well, he's got a lot of DVDs on here. I mean, there are people I recognize, and I'm sure that none of them have made any kind of arrangement with him.
Oh, I'm sure. No, this is what he does.
He's gotten hold of DVDs from people.
He's a scam artist. He bootlegs, talks.
He's got Out of the Blue on here. I mean, I'm thinking there's a serious copyright infringement for that one.
That's big all right.
Yeah,
he's got quite a lot. So this is UFOGuy.org, if anybody... If you guys want to buy DVDs, contact the people who are in DVDs, okay?
Go to a reputable site like UFO TV or
something. Yeah, at least, you know, give credit to the people who actually did the work and put it together. At least contact the production company that filmed it for the conference. Don't go to this guy.
No question. I'm glad to say, and thank you for that question, it's an important one, that people like Bill are so in the minority. We hardly ever see anybody who is, you know, a scam artist in this field. I am completely unfamiliar with him, but no, Bill is a legend in his own mind and a very destructive character.
Actually says he's currently selling puppies on the internet, like taking $1,000 for a puppy and then not delivering. So that's his latest thing.
God.
Well, at least he's not using them to make a coat. You know, as far as we know.
Ah, Cruella de Vil, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's a very kind way to look at it, Rich. Very good.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow. Hitler liked animals and was a vegetarian.
Okay.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay,
any
so I wanted to ask you, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys about the ABC special. Did anyone get to see that? The ABC UFO special.
I literally was working right through that period. They had approached me, asked me if I wanted to participate. I asked them who they were already working with, what their plan was. I did not have a good feeling about it. So, honestly, I can't comment on it. I would like to see it and will see it, but I have
okay,
not.
Okay, so you haven't. Okay, not the. Because I actually didn't get to see it that night because we don't have cable, so I couldn't get it. But I watched it on the ABC website the next morning.
And what did you
think? They posted it. I thought that there was a lot of information that originally was well presented, but the reporter was exceedingly skeptical. She would ask a question, and then she'd, like, lean back and cross her arms and raise her eyebrows. Oh, my gosh, how could anybody look at this woman and answer a question?
Yeah, that's a shame.
And she's talking with people who are abductees, and they're talking about very traumatic experiences, and she made it very difficult. I was amazed that these people were brave enough to get on there and actually talk about the things that they did. I really admire the people who are willing to tell their stories like that.
To be completely honest with you, the main reason that they contacted me was they wanted me to cut introductions to abductees and give the folks at the television project a good reference, and I felt extremely uncomfortable acting as such a go-between, so I passed.
Did they approach you at the Denver MUFON conference, Peter? Because I know they did film some of it at the conference.
I was not aware of that.
There was footage done at the conference. I mean, there was a scene I saw. In fact, a friend of ours here in Rochester emailed me the next morning, and she said, "You were on that."
And
I was like,
I think I know the film crew that you were talking about. They were in that main sales area and by the front.
Yeah, they were in that
area.
The vendor room. Well, I was on there for about 2 seconds in the background of a shot where they showed the UFO Congress table. Because I was there with the International UFO Congress, and I was at the table selling DVDs, and they filmed a shot where you could see the sign that said International UFO Congress.
Excellent.
And
let us know when you get that first big
royalty. I made it on ABC. No kidding. It's like, hey, there I was.
Karen, add it to your resume.
Yeah, right.
You're on. That's legit.
I thought that was funny. Well, you know what was funny was I actually was interviewed. That reporter came up to me and said, "Would you want to talk about this?" And I said, "Sure, yeah, why not?"
Yeah.
So she asked me a few questions, and then I thought, "Oh, well, they're probably not going to use this." You know, I thought it went well, but okay. And then when I actually saw it, I thought, "Okay, well, I was on it, but I was, you know, standing in the background for a second, and that was that." So they didn't use my interview, and I thought it's because I didn't say anything really crazy. Because I think that woman was looking for people to say things that they could edit and twist and, you know, make it sound really terrible. Now, Stan Romanek, I know a lot of people have heard of Stan Romanek. He's got quite a lot of photos and videos, and if anyone hasn't heard of him, he's got a very controversial video that he claims is an image of an alien looking in the window of his house.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about this. When I watched the ABC program, I will say that I had the distinct impression that the interview was handled in a way that prevented him from telling his story.
Huh.
So I have asked him to come on through the keyhole, and actually he's going to do it next week with me. He's going to come on and tell all the things that he was trying to say to ABC that they either cut off or edited out. So that's going to be pretty cool. We're doing a live interview next week, so whatever he says will be out. I'm not going to cut anything. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, I think that's a great idea, Karen.
Yeah, I'll look forward to hearing that as well. It is nothing personal, but when I hear accounts like that, my first reaction is one of skepticism that I do have to work through.
But mine too, actually.
Right, I don't know enough about the case, so I want to hear him say it. You know, I want to give him a chance to talk because he didn't get a chance to talk on ABC.
No, that's not fair.
You know, he was trying to answer questions, and this woman was just really not being receptive at all. And in fact, there was one scene where she was talking with Stan's wife, and they showed a photo of him. They said, well, he got beaten up after he came out with his story. And they showed a photo of him with a bandage on his nose. He had two black eyes. He had a cast on his arm. So this, you're not making up this story. He was in the hospital. And the reporter said, so you're worried about your safety? You're worried about your kid's safety? And the woman said, yeah, I am. And she was actually starting to get a little teary. And the reporter said, oh, you're getting emotional. And I said, yeah? And then the next thing the reporter said was, well, why don't you leave him?
What a bizarre question.
I mean, I guess if you have no human decency or affection for this person you married, then, yeah, maybe that would seem like an option, but I just wasn't seeing that.
Yeah. Well, sounds like ABC has once again done a very good shot at a very important project. We all, well, many of us remember the Peter Jennings piece from 2004. It could have been something very important, but they ended up, I'll be blunt, they lied by omission. They had given tremendous access to the work and research of Bud Hopkins and Dr. David Jacobs and Dr. John Mack, and rejected showing any of it or referring to it. It's just, you know, let's talk about the abduction thing, but then not back it up with anything that we have.
Before we run out of time, because we're about to, I would like to just speak about this because ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, they're all owned by a couple of people. All right? In other words, this is what happens when you get major corporations doing UFO reporting. It is always like this. I predicted prior to the ABC special with Peter Jennings, I put an article out on my site, exactly predicting what ABC was going to do. And it was on media and lies and their inability to deal with the UFO topic in an honest and open way. And I said it's a structural thing. They're part of the established structure of power, and this is their job. And in the build-up to that special in 2004, a couple of people wrote to me and said, I guess you're about to eat your words now because ABC is going to do this big special. And I said, no, hardly. And sure enough, when ABC did their special, just as it's in the first half, and then you deflate it in the second half, and that's exactly what they do all the time. People still don't get this. It's a mass media game, and they're playing with the minds of everyone. They don't just do this stuff by chance. The point is you create what seems like a good case for a little while, and then you poke all the holes in it, or you lead people in the way you want them to go. It's pure propaganda. That's all ABC is ever good for. It's not just UFOs. All of their news. This is like we live in the matrix. We truly, truly do. When people get their news from places like ABC and NBC or CBS, they are allowing themselves to be brainwashed. It's that simple. If you're going to watch that kind of news, the only way you're going to keep any kind of independence of thought is if you go in like knowing that you are a counterintelligence agent and your attitude is, what does this guy want me to believe? And I'm not joking here.
Yeah, I agree.
We have to go out and get our news through independent means, the so-called alternative news media, and to do that, you got to be careful because there's a lot of crackpots out there too. But the fact is, if you're going to plug into the mainstream news media, then you're going to allow yourself to be brainwashed. This is not a joke. All right, there are very few people and groups that dominate America's mainstream news. That is the world's mainstream news. That's the way it is. And they are never, ever to be trusted.
Yeah.
Because everything has to do with sin. Look at their
trust
reporting
no
on the wars. Look at their reporting on the financial meltdown. All of it is dishonest. all of it is incomplete.
Totally.
They're incapable of doing anything
Rich,
else.
I'm so sorry because, boy, I'm loving this. We are getting into some great stuff and we are out of time.
Not again.
We have to stop. I know. I know.
All
I
right.
feel like I was just now cutting you guys off at the end of the first hour, and we're actually running over, and we're running into Angela Joyner's time. She's trying to come on with a Joyner report, and I really don't want to do this. Angela's in the chat room. She's waiting. She's being very patient, but we are over, and we need to get going.
Okay.
Peter, Rich, thank you both so much for joining me tonight. It's been fantastic. Peter, I hope you enjoy the rest of your birthday.
Thank
Happy
you.
Birthday again.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
And Rich, thank you again for that solo. That was awesome, man.
Anybody who missed the first half of the show, you've got to check the archive because, you know, there was this great harmonica solo, so you got to check it out. And on that note, thanks, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to Through the Keyhole, live on the Paranormal Radio Network in UPRN 105.5 FM in New Orleans. Once again, I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guests this evening were Peter Robbins, co-author of Left at East Gate, about the Rendlesham Forest incident, and Richard Dolan, author of both Volumes 1 and 2 of UFOs in the National Security State.
Yay!
Go to our website at www.keyholepublishing.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Stay tuned for the Joyner Report coming up next. See you next week.